Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end.
Huh, Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
As a woman entrepreneur, you know that every connection counts, whether it's with your customers, your team, or your community. Spectrum Business is here to help you build those connections stronger and faster. Imagine running your business with fast, reliable, fiber-powered internet so you can stay connected to customers, employees, and vendors without having to worry. We know flexibility matters. That's why select Spectrum Business packages come with a 3-year price guarantee, so you can focus on running your business. Plus, enjoy savings on internet, phone, TV, and mobile services when you bundle, all with a 30-day money-back guarantee and no long-term contracts. With Spectrum Business, you get more than just internet. You get support with 100% U.S.-based customer service, real people who understand small business, ready 24/7 to help you stay up and running. Join millions of business owners like you across America who trust Spectrum Business for reliability, speed, and support. Visit spectrum.com/business today to get started. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas. When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Pelé leaned in and said something to Freddie.
Don't let them change you. Keep working on what makes you different and what makes you special. It was great advice, but it caused me some problems.
But what could change Freddie Adu?
Soccer is going to explode, and it's going to be around this kid.
We were the Beatles. Everywhere we went, it was the Freddie Show.
And with that came the expectation, and with that came the pressure.
New episodes of American Prodigy drop Tuesdays from Blue Wire Podcasts.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day, just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by Indeed and BetOnline.ag. I'm Pete, joined as always by Darius and Mike. It's been a little bit since we've done a general NBA podcast. It's easy to get caught in the weeds of the Lakers, and as there seems to be peace in the land, right, about as harmonious as it can get post-championship with your two superstars signed to extensions and upgrades and talent on the roster, things are as bright and as rock solid as they can be in the NBA. There is no such thing as a safe place in the NBA, but the Lakers are as well positioned as you can be at this point. However, most of the stars, the real top level guys around the NBA, are in different circumstances that have quite a bit of uncertainty. And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to do a little jaunt around the NBA, talking about the star-heavy teams who also coincide with teams that the Lakers may face, either in the Western Conference playoffs or hopefully the finals. So that'll all tie in, but it's a really unique situation in the NBA where almost every major star is in kind of an odd situation. And we're going to start with James Harden. James Harden did not start out training camp. There were some various entertaining pictures of him floating around the internet. He showed up, I believe, today to start the testing protocol, tweeted a picture of himself palming a ball today.
Perhaps all indicating he's Pete.
Just a ball. Well, okay. I'm worried what else we're going to learn about club etiquette from from Mike today on this pod. We learned about the honey bun on the last pod. So I'm curious what other.
Did you get the honey bun I sent you in the mail?
It has not come yet, Mike. I'm still waiting.
The post office is having some problems these days.
I sent you something, but it sure wasn't a honey bun.
It was not.
That's for sure. I mean, it's funny looking around this superstar thing, looking around the league. And there was a part of me, Pete, that was going to clap back to that and kind of like, I haven't been too impressed with Harden's behavior here. I know there have been many a rant from all sides, but I think take out some of the more generic stuff about how, yeah, you're getting this amount of money to show up like the rest of the guys. Like all of that is pretty obvious, but the wanton disregard for the organization and for the fans to be going out amidst COVID with absolutely no qualms about it. It's just, it's disappointing, you know, for anybody that follows the NBA or just anybody that's just trying to do their best to get their kids in school, to work hard. And I know people can say, oh, you can't conflate all of these issues, but to me, you can, because these are guys in at least somewhat of leadership positions. And it's easy for us to relate to what we've seen with the Lakers going on, with how LeBron has contorted himself, or even though he's seen on the highway in his car, he's got a mask on, even in that sense, and he's not going out anywhere. So it's just that alone kind of really, really pushed me in that over the top as to all of the rest of the stuff that was already bugging me. And it almost, we're going to talk about some teams with these stars where they have a chance to win the title. And I don't even think we can put Houston in anywhere near that conversation, based mostly off of Harden. And as opposed to him trying to embrace everything that's going on with their roster, rallying the troops, leading these guys, right? What can we do to integrate John Wall? How's Boogie looking? You know, all of that kind of stuff. Hey, come join me. Let's figure this stuff out. Rah, rah. Like leadership stuff that he's doing honey buns, with Lil Baby in Vegas instead. So that was my PG version of that, Darius. And I'm just going to leave it at that for now.
So look, Mike, like all the societal stuff, just in terms of the health protocols and sort of the general safety of the players and everything related to leadership and all of that, I'm with you 1,000%. Harden wants out, right? He's made that clear. It's been widely reported. The thing that I would have wanted from him, even if he's going to basically be adamant about not wanting to come back, which would basically take away some of that idea of rah-rah leadership and I'm all on board here. And yeah, John Wall. Yeah, Boogie Cousins. All right, Christian Wood. Like, this is my organization. It's my franchise. You can sort of understand that his want to get out of there might impact some of that stuff, right? What it should not impact is sort of the stuff that you glossed over at the top, which is showing up on time, managing the protocol stuff. And more, from my opinion, is working with the front office to try to put a good face on everything to make sure that both sides come out of this thing as whole as they possibly can be, right? I heard Ramona Shelburne say this. I think it was on The Jump, and the idea of help me help you, right? Which is what Houston should be saying to James Harden, like, help me help you. You want out? That's understandable. We've had 8 years together, right? And we got almost to the summit, right? They lost in game 7 to the Golden State Warriors, which was one of the best teams that I think any of us three have ever seen play. All right, it didn't work out. It's time to move on. The general manager's gone. The head coach you had MVP success under is gone. All right, cool. But let's work together in order to try to salvage this in the best way that we can. We can move you on to a new team, and we can get back the type of trade package that is reflective of how great of a player you are, Instead, though, he's not doing any of that. And he's almost tanking his value and doing it in the most James Harden way possible, right? He's out there partying and going to various night spots and posting these images himself on his IG page. And it's just sort of like, look, man, like professionalism, there's many layers to that. And he is so far beyond all of those layers that it's just disappointing on a bunch of levels to me.
Yeah. The one thing to add before I kick it back to Pete, I know there's been a lot of discussion about, when was the last time a superstar, you know, really had the organization over the coals like this? And some think back to Kobe in 2007. And we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago. In fact, I brought it up in part because of how Dr. Buss flew up from Italy to meet with him face to face. And they had that like respect. And then Kobe decided to stay on board, and or I shouldn't say even decide, but like the Lakers didn't trade him, obviously. And here's the difference between this situation and that one. Harden has gotten exactly what he has asked for the previous many, many years. First, they got Dwight Howard in free agency, who was a star, okay, two-way star, All-NBA first team at that point. Then they traded for Chris Paul. And Darius, you just talked about the run where they almost get past the Warriors. Then, because it's widely reported that Harden was the one leading the way, get Chris Paul out of here and get Westbrook in here. They did that at the expense of their future. Then they set up the entire offensive system around him. Everybody else, yo, PJ Tucker, stand in the corner. Nope, don't move off the corner. What are you doing? You don't get the ball. Get back there, Eric Gordon. Get above the break. Stay put. James will decide when you get the ball. Ariza, same thing. Get in the corner. Hey, oh, Covington, you're here now. By the way, traded a first round pick to do that. Covington, you go stay in the corner and just do what James wants. And that was part of the reason, and maybe the biggest reason why I think they couldn't get over the top against the Warriors, as great as Harden is and all of his skills. So they cater completely to all of his whims. That was not the case with the Lakers. Like, the Lakers were trying to win, but it wasn't like they were out there bringing in second star after Shaq left. And then Mitch Kupchak pulls off the terrific trade to get Powell. And then they come together, and even at that point, they had not acquired him yet, though. And Kobe, yes, he went on the air and said, I want to trade. I want something different. But I think in hindsight, you can sort of understand, we know what Kobe's about. He just wanted to win, and they had not been winning. They hadn't been making postseason runs, right? He was trying to carry teams that were getting out in the first round. So I just think that's a totally different situation from what the Harden one is right now.
Yeah, there's less validity to Harden's complaints, for sure. It is similar, though, in that Harden's got 3 years left on his deal, just as Kobe did. And that puts it in a slightly different situation from the team has a little bit more leverage. There's not the threat of, oh, I'm going to walk in free agency at the end of the summer, which is often in recent times. These situations with Anthony Davis, for example, that's by right around the trade deadline of the year before, where that happens is when things start to really ramp up. And Harden is different in this respect. I will say, though, that I think that this situation has been headed this way for a little while. And it's not always wise to go off of reports, right? So with that disclaimer, the reports were that, you know, Harden wants out, preferably to Brooklyn, possibly Philadelphia. And the Rockets, rightfully, would like a young stud, multiple first-round picks. They want a lot back for the best isolation guy in the game. So totally understandable. But the message that's put across is, and we're willing to get a little bit uncomfortable, right? Or not even a little bit. That's my qualifier. We're willing to get uncomfortable. And I think that when you start off in a contentious and confrontational stance like that, I think this is Harden saying back like, oh, okay, let's get uncomfortable then. And sure. I think that rarely works out for anybody. And that's not a justification for Harden. I think that Mike and I, you and I were talking about the Kyrie situation that we've got different opinions on, but I actually, with Harden, this is actually showing up for the job of
In case anyone's unclear about that, I was not thrilled with Kyrie's comments, but Pete, back to you.
Yes. And just Harden, like you said, he's been catered to a great extent, both in terms of personnel, style of play. I'm really curious to see his stat line, right? Or if do they maintain that same style of play? And Steven Silas is playing a style of ball that is Mike D'Antoni's style of ball. Is that Steven Silas' type of preferred style of play? I don't know. But
Probably not. Right? Probably not. He coached under Rick Carlisle for the last few years, and he was supposedly one of the people who helped design some of the stuff that worked for Luka Doncic, right? Which is like some Iverson cuts and more movement off of the ball. Luka's been compared to Harden a fair amount, but I think he actually resembles more LeBron James in terms of his style of play, but just not as athletic, right? You'll find him in many more spots on the floor than where you'll find a James Harden, and cutting more and moving more and just doing more off of the ball. So I don't expect them to play the same style, Pete.
The only issue though, Darius, there is, well, I guess there are sort of two, but the first one, if Harden's on the floor, he's going to kind of play how he wants to play.
Yeah.
It seems like. So what is in Steven Silas in his first year, you know, what's he really going to do? Is he going to kind of bench him? Is he going to play him fewer minutes? He's in a tricky spot there, because I think there's no question you guys are right. He's not going to want to just do the same thing, especially if they don't know. It's been pretty clear Harden doesn't want to be there. So why are they going to play a system that could just completely revolves around what he does? But then again, if he's there and he's playing, that can be tricky, Pete. And so
that's uncomfortable. Yeah. Different degrees of uncomfortable. We're about to see it. How does this get resolved, do you think?
Well, the reporting, which for people that know more than we do, and I was listening to Tim McMahon, who's been on this story pretty tightly, of course, at ESPN, he's on the Jump today. It seems inevitable that a trade will happen at some point. But what Houston doesn't want to do is just flip him now, because let's say there's only one offer on the table. And we don't know that there is for sure, but it's not like we've heard all these rumors of various teams going in. And if I'm Houston, I wait it out. Wait till I don't think they think they're going to win the title anyway this year. So you want to play as well as you can, and maybe he comes in and he does play well and it does click. But if not, keep it going at least until the trade deadline. See what teams are doing better than they think. See what teams are doing worse. See what teams think, hey, you know what? We could win a title if we make this move now. So teams are at that point, if they feel like that, they're going to give up more. So if I had to make a prediction, it would be that they would wait until the trade deadline and possibly take the best offer then. And if there still isn't a good offer, you can take it into the offseason at that point. But the one thing it does do to me, it takes Houston out of that real contenders mix, just that in its own right, let alone the other moves that they've made.
Yeah, they have a great deal of talent, but it would require a certain rowing in the same direction that Darius was referring to, that in order for them to even have that chance. And that just doesn't seem to be in the cards. Want to head out east.
Pete, right? Do you think he gets traded this season?
I do. I'm with Mike on the trade deadline. But that's the thing, is that they've got some degree of leverage to just wait it out this year. Is this a year that they essentially punt, right? But they didn't. Then the moves they made don't indicate a team that's looking to punt. But this speaks to the preview that we did, right? Of they're a team that is in transition, and that a lot of different guys have different, and different components of it have different agendas, think different things that are important to them, and not everybody seems to be on the same page. So this, to me, this was a slow motion train wreck that we could see from a long ways away. Do you think that that's the resolution? Do you think this extends into the offseason?
No, I think that he gets traded, and I don't put it past it that he's traded before opening night, actually.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Let's move that Philadelphia, right?
Yeah.
We'll go to Brooklyn and Philly. Those are the two teams that have been rumored to be involved in this. Philly is the team, so Brooklyn's supposedly his preferred destination, but there have been some reports that that he'd be willing to entertain going to Philly. Philly is also the team that Daryl Morey is now in charge of, right? And so there's a certain already synergy built in there. And Daryl Morey's been building a team around James Harden for a very long time. And so the big question with respect to Philly in that is, do you move Simmons or Embiid for him? Which I think you'd have to move one of them. And if so, who? So would you guys move either guy for him? And what's the rationale behind that?
So first of all, both of these teams could win the East as is. next year. I think they have enough talent that if they play, if they figure things out and play the right way, two new coaches, but we saw that worked for the Lakers last year, in part given what their star power was. So both of those teams could win as is. I think that Brooklyn has the chance to make a trade that doesn't involve one of their two stars, whereas Philly, that would be much less likely. And but so in Philly's case, that to me is a team where let's see how this looks with Simmons and Embiid, plus the shooting that we acquired. So it's Curry on one side, it's Danny Green on the other, it's Tobias Harris out there, and then some of their bench crew. And let's see with the new coaching staff, with Daryl Morey pulling some strings, maybe this team can start out really hot, like let's and ride that out, and then maybe they're in a position of strength then, where if flip side, let's say they're not playing well, it's not working, Simmons and Embiid are not playing well together, then you're possibly the offer or the look around the league to make a deal increases. So maybe Darius, if you want to hit on Philly, and then we can wrap back to Brooklyn after that.
I think the most natural trade part, everyone says that it should be Simmons that gets traded for him. And to a certain extent, I get that. Embiid is sort of this defensive anchor. And if you're ranking which player is probably perceived to have higher value, and if you listen to reporting that's around the 76ers in terms of who is more favored within the organization, Embiid is that guy, right? And so it probably makes more sense to trade for Ben Simmons, or to trade Simmons. And I'm guessing Houston would probably want Simmons, right? Who is younger and under contract for, I think, four or five more seasons. And so there's a bunch of certainty there, right? I don't know if I'd make that trade. I'm a big fan of Ben Simmons. And
really? Interesting.
Harden is a fantastic talent and such a good player. And he's won an MVP award just in like the last few seasons, right? So his impact is undeniable. It just is. The lack of leadership that he's been showing over the last several seasons, but and sort of culminating with this stretch now during this offseason concerns me. It just concerns me. Now, that's not to say that I think so highly of Ben Simmons that he's this ultimate leader or anything like that, because he does not have the history of that either, right? But Harden, some of Harden's more famous playoff failings and sort of the leadership and lack thereof that he's been showing, it just concerns me as now him being again just like, yes, let me give up and in his prime or approaching his prime, young player who is exceptional on both offense and defense. Is he unconventional? Yes, he is. But the effect they have on playoff basketball winning around a team that makes sense for them, like, it's probably closer than what the results would say to this point. And so I think it's tricky. Mike, do you trade Ben Simmons for James Harden if it's straight up one for one?
Yeah, so this ends up getting really down to a personal preference type thing. And I would echo your concerns about Harden, especially over the last couple of years. And I don't know if that's something that turns around, especially with the amount of money that is coming in there.
Well, also, dude, he's 31, Mike. He's not. This isn't a situation where he is 28, right? Or 27, right? Like, he's 31 now. This isn't a, like, okay, well, the leopard doesn't change his spots, right? Like, and how will he age? How will he look in two or three seasons? And it's a tricky equation to me. Sorry to jump on your point again, but it's an interesting conversation.
Well, and also just the way that he played, which maximized his scoring and, you know, sort of secondarily his assists to some ridiculous numbers, right? 35 type points a game. But I never found that to be a sustainable model for winning, especially in playoff series. And he wasn't doing that as much when Chris Paul was there. And so I never thought for a second that they had a chance to beat the Lakers in a series last year, based in part upon the way that they were going to play. And then we've been over my feelings before about two-way wings that are getting paid that much. And I put Harden is a little bit more like a Damian Lillard. Now, he can hold up defensively against some bigger guys, especially in the post, especially on switches to an extent, but he's not a game changer on that end. And this is, again, why like the Lakers are in such a nice position by having their two max guys, defensive and offensive game changers when needed in crunch time. And so take out all of Harden's the glory that he's had on offense from a statistical perspective, but I worry about some of that, and that's set aside from all of the leadership stuff. So yeah, I think that I would be hesitant in any situation, and depending on what I had on my roster. And you know, part of that also is, do you know that he's going to be happy in your situation? Which some teams may think, oh, well, he's much better than anybody we have, but is he going to want to be happy here and want to stay here? So it's a tricky one, Pete. And that's something that's going to have to be factored into all of these potential spots if he does, in fact, get moves.
Yeah. And all of the concerns that you guys are raising about Harden, I 100% agree with. I thought it was very telling how he played in game 7 against OKC. They ended up winning that game, but I've seen him in multiple situations where when it gets hot and heavy in the third or fourth quarter of a really big game, it's like, where he's a little too eager to pass the ball. He's a little too eager to stand in the corner or just swing it, like not really wanting a part of those situations. That's one of my biggest criticisms of him, along with, you know, Mike D'Antoni, always his system always inflates the numbers of the primary ball handler. This was Steve Blake, Kendall Marshall, Jeremy Lin. You know, that's something that's throughout. Steve Nash saw a huge boost. And where I'm at, though,
Kobe saw
that second
Kobe
half of that
excelled,
season.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And anyways.
Yes. And also all of that is true. For me, though, there's such a fatal flaw in Simmons, and Simmons on a second contract. Like, I don't think Simmons can be your second best player or your second best offensive player and win a title. Like, when Jimmy was there and he was on his rookie deal, that was a team that got to the Eastern Conference Finals, to a game 7, right? And lost on a buzzer beater. But I'm struggling to think of the last player who did not have a jump shot as a threat, who was as important to their team, to a title team, as Simmons is to this current Philly team. And you have to go back to kind of an era that's just fundamentally different in terms of spacing, in terms of the areas of the floor that you look to attack, that I know it's such an old criticism, but come playoff time, who do you give the ball to on Philly
It's the Giannis criticism too, though, right?
For sure. And Giannis is like 7 feet tall with all of the athletic gifts in the world. And we see that he's even more athletically gifted than Simmons is.
Simmons is like 6'10", though. I mean,
Giannis will at least shoot the three, though. He shoots it.
Right. Like, he's got a kinda turnaround in the post. It's further along than Simmons.
So I wouldn't, I would say Pete's concern is super valid and does apply to Giannis. And that's the biggest reason why the Bucks crashed out the last 2 years, because that one weakness. And I think you could say the same thing about a Philly team that doesn't have another sort of wing perimeter scoring option late, because Embiid, you're not always going to be able to get on the ball down on the block. So that can be something that you think about, what Frank Vogel and Anthony Davis and LeBron would game plan for, right? Like that's at least a very firm game plan. Here's what we're going to make them do. And can he do it? Can Giannis do it? Can Simmons do it? But Pete, the counter to that is 24, can guard multiple positions, monster in transition, there's so much there to work with that you make the rest of the roster try to fill that, those holes. Like but you're not wrong. The shooting thing for him and Giannis is an absolute concern, and it's something that's going to follow them until they prove it in the playoff series.
Yeah, for sure. And it's kind of like Simmons to me is similar to Westbrook in that he's one of the great floor raisers in the game, but I think he also puts a limit on your ceiling if he's on a max contract, like not being able to have a jumper. If that can work, if you can have a max guy on as one of the, you know, top two guys on your team, and you can win a title with that in the 2020s, I will be fascinated to see what that looks like.
Yeah. No, so I'm just thinking if to transition to Brooklyn along the point that you're making, so there's no concern about KD or Kyrie with a jump shot. Okay, about creating a shot late in games, and you can envision a playoff series in which they're close enough and they just battle close enough, and then wow, There's KD on one side of the court. There's Kyrie on one side of the court. Both of them can get to a shot however they want. And that's enough to win a lot of playoff series. The flip side between them and Philly, though, then is defensively. And can KD post Achilles? You know, can he find a way to get all of that accomplished? So, Pete, maybe when we come back from break, we can get into a little bit more, starting with Darius's thoughts off this Brooklyn Nets squad.
Let's do it. Let's throw it to break. We'll be back with that. The wait is finally over and football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria. You can contact them the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier. Like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it, and fast. Try Indeed out with our $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offers valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. Darius, would KD, Kyrie, and Harden work from a just basketball concept? Right? The old phrase is there's only one ball, right? And that takes that idea to its logical or perhaps illogical extreme where, yes, there's only one ball. You also have three of the very best isolation players in the world. What's your take on not just Brooklyn, but like the how Harden fits in, would fit into that ecosystem?
So hold on, Pete, you want to go to what could happen if Harden's there first before just talking about what could happen with the Nets team that is there now? Let's do both. Go ahead, Darius.
Mike, to your point, and the way that we started this pod, it was sort of this idea of like drama, right? Like the drama around Harden and the Nets.
A little cheese may pod. Yeah. Yeah. Right? Talk a little, a little gossip.
So when you talk about the Nets now, the idea of Harden is even active with the Nets, right? I saw a quote.
The Caris LeVert thing. Yes.
Yeah, like Caris LeVert got asked about James Harden not reporting to Houston.
Like, yeah, Nash got asked about it too. Yeah, in practice today.
These are wild questions to ask the Nets players. Or I didn't even know that Nash got, well, the question too, Mike. So there are already dreams about Harden in Brooklyn. And Steve Nash, look, I love Steve Nash, right? He has one of Kobe's MVPs up on his mantle, but... Mm-hmm. I still respect Steve Nash a great deal. Amazing teammate, great leader, all of that stuff. Steve Nash is also a rookie head coach, and he's now coaching Kyrie Irving. And maybe Kyrie will write out emails to Steve too about like what's going on and how he's feeling about the game plan.
Don't get me started, dude. Don't get me started on that. Okay, I don't want to debate Pete on it. We've had a lot of conversations on text about it. Don't get me started. I love Steve Nash too.
I think we should get you started. Should get you started.
Oh my goodness.
So
get it out, Mike.
So I'm just saying though, Mike. So Nash is already going to have his hands full, right? I think he's happy to have his hands full with this specific situation. Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving supremely talented players, a bunch of other really gifted offensive players, right? I think their defense is a question mark that is not getting talked about enough, personally. I think that KD is going to be fine offensively. I wonder about how he's going to defend coming off of the Achilles, much more than I'm worried about how silky his jump shot is going to look, for example. I'm semi-high on Brooklyn. I'm not necessarily looking at them as like the favorites to win the East. I think there's a bunch of continuity stuff that still needs to be worked out. I think there's personality stuff that is going to need to settle in with this team that has not played together, even though they've been around as a group for a year. So there's definitely some runway that I think they're going to have to take advantage of in a shortened season and a shortened off season. That's going to be tricky for them to navigate. That said, at their peak, I think they can be a wonderful team, especially offensively, and that they could end up winning a lot of games, 130 to 122, right? And it's just like, wow, that was great. Bring in Harden, though, and maybe you're asking too much of Steve Nash at that point, while also likely sacrificing a bunch of the depth that I think that team is going to need in order to compete at a high level. And look, Harden's a fantastic player. Like, we don't have to say that over and over again, though, to understand that there actually is only one ball, Pete. And if you had that type of talent in a system, like even like if it was the early 2000s and you were running the triangle, for example, or if you were running a very motion-based system like the Warriors run, then I think you could get a lot out of those three guys. I don't know what Nash is going to do if he had three really strong, ball-dominant, superstar-level guys at that level. I wouldn't want too much overlap to me, but maybe I'm wrong.
That's to play devil's advocate a bit, I don't entirely disagree, but defending that team would be very difficult in a seven-game series. Who's got three perimeter defenders that could, like, we talk about the stacking talent with the Lakers and how at some point, this is something that I think we're going to see a benefit of from adding Montrezl Harrell. It's like, yeah, we can focus our attention on keeping LeBron from getting to the rim, maybe LeBron and AD to the rim. If Harrell can play with those two, that just becomes, you're going to break at some point. And like, who does your third best isolation perimeter defender is defending Kyrie Irving, James Harden? You know what I mean? Like, and so I don't, like, yes, all of the holes exist there. I'd just be very, very curious to see it. It's, before we get into the Harden stuff, though, Mike, where are you at with this current iteration? It seems like this Brooklyn team is kind of that manifestation of, you know, we talk about the player empowerment movement, just with hiring Nash, with the Kyrie stuff, with the media statements and all of that. It seems kind of like a more severe version of that than we've seen before.
Yeah, I just want to, I mean, I'm interested in them as a basketball team, and the Kyrie thing is a separate issue, and it's simple. Like, I just think he's got to recognize what league he's in, and he's part of the collective, and that you can't label media into a current context. And 95% of the questions that he gets are very much fair and very related to basketball, and he gets himself into trouble with stuff. But that's the thing that I actually want to get into. Is if you look at their roster, what's their closing lineup right now? And how is that team going to hold up defensively? So if you're, it's not going to be DeAndre, I don't think, but you sort of have to plug in KD and Kyrie, and then you're probably having Joe Harris out there for the shooting. But then what is it? Is it, you know, Torian Prince kind of struggled last year? Is Landry Shamet take a step up? Like, can they get enough from, does Rodion Kurucs show enough defensively where he's out there? Like, I mean, it's
probably have LeVert out there.
LeVert's one for sure. And then, it, you know, Dinwiddie is a little repetitive, right, with Kyrie. And then so they need one more, like almost every team in the NBA. They need one more sort of two-way big wing or a PJ Tucker type where they can play smaller with KD. And like they need.
It seems to me.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go ahead, Pete. Go ahead.
It seems like they're a trade away. Like, it's more of a roster imbalance issue. Yeah. Like, to me, they're a Dinwiddie trade away and whatever would for a wing. And then that roster makes sense all of a sudden. So
yeah,
that's me, they're the most good, dangerous team because it's more that they're out of balance than they don't have enough talent.
And that's what I was getting at. So they're like, I think they could win the East with sort of a personnel flop of one type, whether it's flipping one of the centers. They're not going to, sounds like they're not going to flip DeAndre, and I don't know what value that really has. But Jared Allen, you know, for some other one of those sort of two way wing guys. And then, you know, they have plenty of firepower. I actually think KD is going to be great. I think like for him to have all of the additional time off to really get that Achilles healed, not have to push it too much. We know that touch has gone nowhere. The IQ, you know, like, so I'm not worried about KD at all. I have some worries about Kyrie really embracing that he is now the number two. He's not the one. He's not like the 1B or the 1A. He's the number two, like he was with LeBron. If he can embrace that, that's super dangerous. But yeah, I think that of the teams that we're looking at, and we'll touch on some of the other ones quickly that have these stars, they are intriguing to me to win the East if they can make one more move to supplement to balance the roster out. And that's not talking about Harden, by the way. That's a whole nother can of worms. And I think, I don't know if that automatically solves the problem, because they're having to put so much out there and then they're still not having that two-way type defensive wing. So that team would certainly be interesting. And I'm not saying I would pick them, Darius, to win the East, but I think that they could explore it in a different way and be the best team in the East.
Yeah, I think both of you guys make great points. I think Pete's point about just having so much offensive firepower matters. And in a playoff series, it would be hard to stop them, right? And in the grind of the playoffs, where every possession matters that much more, the saying that applied to the Lakers last season was like their best offense was their defense, right? Because they got stops and then they turned those stops into transition opportunities and then put pressure on the opponent to stop them. Brooklyn, if they had a James Harden, right, it could be the opposite, where their best defense could be their offense, right? Because they put so much pressure on you to stop them. And then when they score, they're able to force you to take the ball out of the hoop, play a little bit slower. They get to get their defense set. And there's a lot of advantages that come with that. The stuff that would concern me most about Brooklyn is still just the chemistry stuff and the fact that, and I always revert back to this, so maybe I'm a broken record, but it's like these are people and things have to be harmonious and to a certain extent, and you have to row in the same direction to a certain extent, and you have to keep guys happy and get them to buy in and maintain that buy-in over the course of not only a long regular season, but into and through the playoffs, where it's very likely that roles are going to have to change in order to meet specific matchups from the right angle and trajectory in order to win. And that's a difficult job. It just is. And I don't know how that's going to go. Pete, like,
and we saw an example of how that can go sideways last year with the Clippers. And they're the next team that I'd like to get into is the, we had some comments, right, from Doc Rivers to Paul George, and Kawhi Leonard was like, I'm gonna keep doing what I'm doing. And, so they've opened up their training camp. I'm curious, though. I think I could see it going sideways again for many of the same reasons, right? I don't think necessarily the reasons why things went they did last year are gone. I don't think they've necessarily addressed that. But I do think that they have been humbled to some degree, right? They're not pounding their chests quite the way that they were. And that is a really talented team. And they did add a guy in Serge Ibaka who gives them another dimension at the five. They did not have a viable stretch five last season, with the exception of the minutes that Jermichael Green played. And so their team that going into camp, Mike, I like their balance a little bit more, but I've got some big questions about not only the chemistry components that Darius is talking about with respect to Brooklyn, but their athleticism. I think they're significantly less athletic than we are. And then their guards, they've got too many defensive guards that I just don't think can hold up in a playoff circumstance, but they're still a very dangerous team. You always talk about those elite two-way wings, and they're at this point, you know, you'd be hard pressed to do better than what the Clippers have in that respect. So what do you think of kind of this new, more perhaps humbled version of the Clippers?
The real quick last point I wanted to make to Darius about Brooklyn, and I promise this is 10 seconds. I do believe in Nash. I think that he's got the perfect temperament. If anybody can actually get to Kyrie and KD and the rest of that roster, is a guy like him that's been there as a player, that's also super laid back personally, that's smart. So I do believe in him. Moving to the Clippers. Ty Lue's going to have a lot of heavy lifting to do, I think. And it's intriguing. Like, you don't want your coach to have to be the main personality in the locker room. I think you want to have a coach that can do that, but also players on the court. And, you know, Paul George and Kawhi, that has not been their thing in their career. So to be that vocal leader, to be the guy that rallies the troops, the guy that gets everybody to dinner or a team movie, and if you don't have one of those guys that can do it, I think that eventually comes to roost at some point of the season. But like Pete said, I think the talent is undeniable. I think they have the care factor that's been forced upon them by the fact that they lost to Denver in the fashion that they did, where they are going to be expected to play hard every night almost. Whereas the Lakers next year, well, they're the Lakers. They have LeBron, so they will be to a different extent, but not the microscope is going to be on their day to day effort. And so I think they'll respond just fine to that. And that's why I think if I had to pick, I probably would pick them second in the West based off of that. But I still don't see a solution based on the roster, based on the personnel, that's going to solve that on court chemistry, leadership, ball handling, like that type of spot, I don't think has been filled yet. And I think that might not, because it's not going to come to fruition too much in the regular season based on the talent and based on how much they're going to want and need to win. But I think in playoff matchups, I do think that still needs to be addressed for them. And that's why, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. Like there are some other teams, I think, in the West that could beat them in a playoff series. But I don't want to discount what they can do in the regular season.
Yeah, I think that even if they're locked in, they've got that issue in the front court with their athleticism. I think going from Harrell to Ibaka, I was really struck by Ibaka tape, right? He was a guy that as free agency was coming about, I watched a good deal of tape on him because I thought like he would be a potential fit. And I was so struck by what a floor bound player he is. He's very smart. He's very crafty. It's funny. He went from one archetype to the other. But when you think of that in context with their whole front court, we always talk about putting pressure on the rim with the Lakers. The Clippers don't have much in the way of guys that do that. Ibaka, again, is more of a jump shooter at this point of his career. Zoo is, you know, he'll roll to the basket, but he needs creation to happen for him, unlike a guy like Harrell who can get there himself. Neither Kawhi nor PG are putting a ton of pressure on the rim. They're more jump shooters. And so I think the Lakers are a particularly bad matchup for them this year just because there's such a massive athleticism discrepancy in the front court that my concerns with the Clippers this year are less about that whole skipping the process and more to do with I think there's some major flaws on this roster. And that's something that as we go around the league, we go to Brooklyn, like the best case scenario for Brooklyn, I think is the best team outside of the Lakers in the NBA, the version that makes a trade that now they've got more defensive talent and more balance on their roster. That's the team that I've, you know, or even the Harden trade, right? If that were to happen, I'm at least curious to see what that looks like over the course of a 7-game series. But with the Clippers and just in general, I look around the league and I feel like maybe I'm just being a homer, but the Lakers are just so much more well-positioned than anybody else. We could talk about Milwaukee and the year that they're going into. There's a lot of uncertainty there with Giannis. You've got Steph trying to navigate this situation without Clay, with younger guys in Wiseman and Wiggins to incorporate into, you know, the him and Draymond. You just look around the league, like almost every star is in a circumstance where I look back at the Lakers and I'm like, this is as well positioned as we could be relative to, like, there's no other team in the NBA where I'm like, oh, they're going to be an absolute load. And I'm almost sure that they will be. I don't know. Am I off base, Darius, in thinking that the Lakers are just really on a different tier at this point?
No, I think that, look, the Lakers are the defending champs and they got better. They started with a head start and they did nothing to take away that head start. If anything, they added to it. I think that any optimism around the Lakers is well-founded, and as the regular season kicks in, we'll see how well-founded it actually is. But I think the perception of them now is what it should be, and people should be fearful of them as a real threat to repeat. The Clippers, I'm going to push back against the idea that you talked about a little bit, Pete, or just, I don't think that you're framing the Clippers as a bad team at all. Mike said that he thought they would be the second best team in the West. I'm assuming that's where you have them as well.
I do too. That's the thing, is that I think that, like, I'm picking nits for sure, but relative to the Lakers, I do think that there are some serious roster flaws.
Yeah. I guess I still believe really highly in Kawhi and Paul George.
Especially Kawhi,
Especially Kawhi, but even Paul George.
Hmm. So we talked about earlier about Harden, right? And kind of his playoff.
Yeah.
Paul George doesn't kind of strike on your radar on the same thing because he does for me. It's similar to Harden.
So yes and no, I guess, is the most dearest answer that I could give to that question, Pete. Paul George played really poorly in that game seven. And I think that shot off the backboard off the side of the backboard is going to live in infamy for him in real ways. And his lack of accountability in his recent podcast appearance with Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes, I think, only fuels some of the conceptions about him that were reported over the offseason. I think most notably by Johan Buva from The Athletic, right? Where there was real thoughts that Paul George was very much a everyone else's fault, but not mine. I think he tried to clean that up at like the first day of training camp or when he first spoke with the Clippers media. But I think that that's a stain that he's going to have to live with. It's tricky, though. Paul George has been on the wrong side of some big shots, like Damian Lillard hit that big shot against him. And I think some of the things that do Paul George wrong or that affect his perception is that he always has something to say about things when they go wrong, and it's almost always the wrong thing, right? So Damian Lillard's shot was a bad shot. Doc Rivers tried to use me like I was Ray Allen, when in reality, none of that stuff really lined up with reality. I just think, though, that when it comes right down to it, he's just still a really, really good basketball player, and that he can play better than he did during the playoffs. And he's very likely to actually play better moving forward. I don't know. Maybe that's misguided from me. The athleticism stuff that you mentioned in the front court, that stuff's real. And I do think that they are now disadvantaged a bit more against the Lakers than what they were before. That said, they're going to cause teams problems. I think they can cause the Lakers some problems too, to a certain extent. Like, the Lakers lost defense on the wing. They got some back with Wes Matthews. Obviously, they could call LeBron into that. They can call AD into that. One of the things the Lakers like to do, though, is have size on the perimeter. And they did when they matched up with the Clippers, one of the things that they did was, like, they told LeBron, like, you get to go rest on Patrick Beverley for a long time because Danny Green is going to guard Kawhi, and they're going to push up either KCP or Avery Bradley to defend Paul George. They can't do some of those same things this season based off of their defensive personnel. Like, I don't think they're going to be able to put Dennis Schroeder on Paul George, for example. And that may mean that, is Kawhi going to guard Paul George? Is he going to guard Kawhi for the full game?
You mean LeBron?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, is that going to be LeBron's primary defensive matchup? So it's tricky, right? Like, I'm not saying that the Clippers have made up ground on the Lakers. I just think that there's matchup stuff that goes a bit both ways in my opinion. Is that fair, or am I being too devil's advocate here?
No. I mean, that's they're Kawhi and Paul George in theory, especially defensively. And they do give them a big advantage. Like, that was why we all made a big deal out of it when they did the trade. And it's, as far as the Lakers specific matchup, we've kind of gone over it before. I think you can just play Kuz and Markieff a little bit more, right? If you want to be bigger on the wing for most of the game, and those guys can hang just fine. And then you let AD and LeBron slide over for crunch time, right? So that's me. Or you just have KCP chase George around. And if he wants to shoot over the top, that's fine. Like, just zooming out though on this Clippers team and getting a little bit more deep into Paul George, and then I actually want to focus more on Kawhi quickly to kick it back to Pete to close this out. So George in the playoffs had some really good games and he had some really bad games, but overall he shot 40% from the field, he shot 33% from three, and his assist to turnover ratio to me was the big problem. 3.8 assists to 3.1 turnovers. That's terrible. Right. That's especially when you're not being efficient as a shooter. So he played, it wasn't just that last game, he played subpar. Kawhi, on the other hand, his numbers are great. 28 points, 49% from the field. His 3-point shooting wasn't very good, 33 for him. He's usually above that. But then he's 5.5 assists to 2 turnovers, right? 9.3 rebounds. Like, he, you know, his numbers were there. My issue with Kawhi is more he just plays in a very specific and emotionless and he plays a certain way that if you just plug him in like Toronto did, where Toronto already had their whole system, it was a group of guys that played
in a culture
. And like, so the Lowry and Marc Gasol and like in Ananobi stepping up, and like they just Van Vliet, like they functioned where that assassin guy who just played his game, they fit him into that brilliantly. And they just, so he didn't have to do anything other than go on, score, like go take a jumper. And it was like, it was a two totally different things. But the Clippers, they didn't have that to the same extent. They had the screen roll with Lou Will and Harrell. Like, that was like a staple. And then Beverly playing defense. Like, and Kawhi just kept doing that same thing. And Darius, I think you alluded to this earlier in his comments, were like, yeah, I'm just going to keep being me. Like, that to me, that's not leadership. That's not, and he didn't have to do it in San Antonio either. Paul George isn't going to do it, right? Kawhi's not. And so if those two aren't going to, that's what LeBron does, man. That's he leads and he puts them in a direction. And that to me is what faltered in the Denver series when they just had to have somebody sort of not just take the reins for themselves and take turns. Like how many times did Luke Walton say that about Ingram and like Lonzo and Julius? It'd be a different guy every night. Like, that to me is the killing type of factor that I don't know if that can be addressed. And again, that's while picking them to finish second. I think they're super dangerous. But that's what my point is, Darius.
I would just say too, Mike, that I agree with that. That if I have concerns about them, it's more on the leadership chemistry side. Pete, I feel like you're seeing both of those things, and that's why you're just like, oh man, I'm happy for the Lakers, right?
Hey man, what Mike said about it not being Toronto or San Antonio is spot on. The Clippers are a situation where they need leaders to step up, not just one, but they need a primary guy. Like, just showing up and dropping 28, 8-8 is not going to get it done, right? It's a situation where everybody needs to be brought together, and when that culture isn't already established, it's very difficult to achieve that if your star is not the person who's really the driving force behind it. And that really speaks to the whole idea of what we've been talking about, is so many of the elite players, we didn't get to Milwaukee, we didn't get to Golden State and stuff, but they're the kind of the uncertainty of those situations has been ground well covered, and we'll get to that as well. But I think that outside of the Lakers, the best player in the league who's on a team that's kind of built on solid ground, I think, is Jimmy Butler. I think that pretty much everybody else, your Kawhi Leonard, Giannis, KD, all these guys that are Harden, that are in kind of that top 5 to 7, aside from LeBron and AD, are in these situations that could go a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and there's something to prove. Something
to prove, which is a good thing to have. But it's something that I think the Lakers have a head start, even with this quick turnaround, that having those superstars and a culture and environment that's stable, which is so funny to at this point, not, you know, before last season, right, going into the preseason, talking about the Lakers as the most stable environment amongst the elite teams feels really good. So it was good to do another trip around the NBA. We'll do this again soon and probably zero in on a team or two here and there so we can go a little deeper into what teams do. But when we come back for Friday's show, we'll be previewing the very first preseason game of the 2020-21 NBA season. But amazing. Until then, yeah, man, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
See you guys.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound is Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddie pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant. Yes. And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really?
At a playground?
Yeah, really. Look at these listings from dealers.
Wow, your search can really get that specific.
Really?
And you just put in your info and boom, car's in your budget.
Mom needs a second, honey.
You can really have it delivered?
Really, or I can pick it up at the dealership.
Mom!
One sec, sweetie. Mommy's buying a car.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Kyle, again? Really?
AutoTrader. Buy your car online. Really? Really?